Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 207 of the podcast with Alexis Frederick Frost, one of the cartoonists behind Griffins Aren't So Great and Sleepless Night, along with James Sturm and Andrew Arnold. The Adventures in Cartooning team are doing everything right, from great character design to captivating plot to hilarity to creating stories so perfect for the target audience, they are sure to spawn off legions of future cartoonists. Okay, you get it. I'm a fan. Let's make some comics and have an adventure. Here is episode number 207 of the podcast with Alexis Frederick Frost. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Alexis Frederick Frost. I am excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to be here. This is my first podcast that I'm on, and I listen to a lot, so I'm psyched to actually put my voice on. I guess not vinyl. I mean, what is it?
Digital?
Digital. O's and O's. O's and ones.
Laying down some sweet O's and ones.
Some O's and ones.
I got totally binary on the Let's Get Busy podcast.
That's right. Let's drop the binary.
So now that I feel fully comfortable nerding out with you.
All right.
let me just tell you flat out that so I love Adventures in Cartooning. I do, and I think when I met you face to face, I sort of said that. I'm sure I said that enthusiastically, grinning ear to ear. But that was a really fun thing for me, that when we went to Gaithersburg Book Festival, that you were there. He was this guy that I knew who did this thing that I love. And I talk about a lot on this podcast, Alexis, this feeling of when a kid gets to meet an author, it's weird because we don't often think that the people whose names are printed on books are like actually people. Mm. But here as a 34-year-old adult, I had that experience with you. I was freaking out inside. It was awesome.
Well, you can say you love my work as much as you want, because you can never hear that too much. So it's always good to get positive reinforcement. But the Gaithersburg Book Fair was really fun. I really enjoyed my time there. And it brings in a lot of just great authors, a lot of fun people doing really fun stuff. So I was glad to meet you. I'm new to the area, so it was fun to, you know, it's always encouraging when you see a good, strong literary community full of, you know, pretty dynamic people. So
no doubt. And it's in a location being Gaithersburg that it's so close to DC and so close to Baltimore, so close to all of us.
Yeah.
That it really works out to be able to get so many people came down from New York and all that. And that was great. And they always get lots of I feel like the people that are organizing it want to have a wide representation across the board of picture book authors and graphic novelists, cartoonists and chapter book authors, and then up to adult. They really are trying hard to get a diverse group there, and they don't fail.
there's a really good range of people from, you know, it looks like there's a lot of tents with like political wonks and stuff.
Oh,
And
yeah.
then there's a lot of little graphic novels and storybooks. So but I think the thing that ties it all together is sort of the excitement about books and writing. And you can really kind of feel that with the organizers. I mean, the mayor shows up
Yeah.
and he's like really excited. So it's definitely a cool scene. I've been to, you know, a bunch of obviously book fairs, and it's nice to see you know, the different vibes in the different areas. And I think this one has a good vibe.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, so I came to know you, I think the world is coming to know you through Adventures in Cartooning. Adventures in Cartooning is amazing. I mean, to have a cartoon to teach kids about cartoons and how to read graphic novels and how all the components function together to tell a story is great. But so I have a couple questions to ask you about just how that came to be, right? Because I now know you, but there's two other names on the cover, James and Andrew, that I don't know. Are these people that you work with together? Or maybe you could just tell me about what the Center for Cartoon Studies is. All of this sounds intriguing to me.
Yeah, so the Center for Cartoon Studies is a really fantastic little school that opened in 2004. I think it was established in 2004. 2005 is the first year that they had students, and I was part of the first flock of kids that came through the door. And Andrew was also a fellow classmate, and the school was started and founded by James Sturm and Michelle Ollie. James Sturm is a, you know, I don't know if you know his work, but he's a very well established graphic novelist that's done like Golem's Mighty Swing and
Oh, I do know that one.
what is his Market Day is one of the new ones. So he's done a lot of really great novels. So he established this school to kind of encourage sort of creating graphic novels in, I would guess, like a more like a literary vein, as opposed, or maybe, you know, as opposed to like a Marvel or a DC kind of superhero model. So sort of a different way to explore your voice through graphic narratives. And being part of the first year, first class was really fun, because we kind of the students and the teachers were really close, and there was sort of a relationship as we were, you know, saying what things worked, what things didn't. And Andrew and I and James kind of bonded over playing ping pong. We had a ping pong table downstairs, so we had a pretty friendly, well, a friendly but ferocious rivalry on the table there. So and then we collaborated, but that's not the whole story. The sort of core of Adventures in Cartooning is this idea of empowering kids to tell their stories through comics, using very sort of simple character designs. And one of the exercises we did at the Center for Cartoon Studies was doing a comic using only drawings from Ed Emberley's books. I don't know if you
Yes.
know those, like Make a Worlds. Everything's sort of built up from simple shapes,
Yeah,
circles, triangles, you know, you
fingerprints, things
add.
like that. Yeah.
Exactly. So, like I said, we were part of the first year, so it was a very diverse group of kids there, or students. I guess we weren't kids at that point. You know, some people that had a sort of more writing background, some people that were poets, some people that were fine artists. So there was a big range of interests and sort of technical skill levels. So by reducing your sort of visual vocabulary to these everything that came from these books, you really had to focus on the storytelling. And some of the best comics sort of that year came from that. Well, I think came from that one exercise, because you were so stripped down that you didn't get lost in sort of the sort of the draftsmanship or trying to do something fancy with your layouts and things like that. You had to focus on the story. Hmm. So that is sort of kind of, we thought like, this is a great, or James kind of thought this was a great exercise. And there wasn't maybe a ton of books like that out sort of in the world for kids. Like there's a lot of how to books, like you, this is how you draw Batman, this is how you draw a comic sort of in a DC way. Yeah. But we wanted to sort of enwrap that all in a story so that you could see these little characters, which are very simple, can tell a really fun and entertaining story, you know, within using the grammar of comics. So that was, I guess that was the genesis of it. And, you know, that one exercise, and that's what we tried to do in the story, to kind of keep it all together. So it was interesting and also educational.
Well, and I think it also, especially because you use that sometimes scary word of that it's educational, is that it worked. It worked because you were engaging kids from, I felt like, from a place of, hey, come into my studio, I make cartoons, and let's make a cartoon together.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of, here's all the steps that you need to do to make a cartoon. You did it like you were talking to kids at their level, like you were engaging them where you needed to, which is that let's start with story. Let's get you to be a part of the story, and then we can talk about the different pieces, as opposed to, well, first I'm going to teach you how to draw a bubble, and then I'm going to teach you how to lay out your plot. It just, it worked. The format you engage the kids with, they engage the readers with, worked really well.
Yeah, because it's very much story first is I think where I'm coming from, or where we were coming from for that book. You know, I know when I was a kid in middle school or whatever, using comics was a way that I could sort of, you know, process the world around me and sort of relate to other people as kind of a nerdy, you know, kid that was awkward socially a little bit and stuff. But I could use these, you know, pictures as a way to tell a story and to get people to laugh at jokes and stuff like that. And I think, you know, there's so many different ways to tell your story. And just trying to, Adventures in Cartooning was really focusing on saying, well, maybe writing isn't what clicks with you. Maybe, you know, maybe you're not musical. You know, maybe you like comics, and maybe this is a way that you can tell your story. And I think one of the most sort of uplifting or positive experiences I have is when you're doing a school visit or a library visit, and then a teacher comes in at the end and is like, you know, that kid that you talked to for like 10 minutes, like, he never says anything in class, or, you know, he's really shy, but, you know, we didn't know that he was like this interested in comics, or, you know, 'cause then they always have some sort of really crazy, wacky story. You know how kids are. They are the most creative things in the world. So, yeah, so I guess it's just a tool for self-expression. It was kind of how I approach comics.
Have you been making comics? You're saying, it sounded like you were saying you've been making comics since a kid. You've just been always drawn into that?
Yeah, I have. I used to watch the old like 60s Batman TV show, and then write like illustrated comics with like crazy things. They were crazy because they were so non-crazy. Like Batman and Catwoman go to the store and purchase an outfit, or you know, Batman and Robin go to the amusement park and ride rides together. It was like, it's very strange, like domestic.
Say, like domestic of versions of them. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So it was like
Batman was dusting his apartment. Yeah, because Catwoman was going to come over.
That's right. And then they're, you know, they went out skateboarding or something. I was just nice. Taking these characters and doing something that like I would do. So
did you read DC Comics growing up too? Like, were you blending those two things, seeing it on TV and then And then reading, you know, it as well?
This is sort of a major weakness of mine, is that I really didn't read American comics as a kid very much. I read Tintin, and I read that was probably the biggest comic that I had. And then when I was in middle school, I had a friend who was Polish, and he showed me Mouse for the first time. His father was a lit teacher at I think Emory College in Atlanta, and so they had this copy of Mouse, and I read it, and it like blew my mind in a way that nothing I've read since then has. In a way that, you know, it's a disturbing read. You know, I felt like I hid it under my mattress. Like I kind of felt like, oh, should I be, you know, reading this thing about the Holocaust? And but it affected me emotionally in a way that no other sort of comic had up to that point. And that's sort of how I got back into, or became interested in, reading comics more, as opposed to sort of going through the DC route or something like that. So
that sounds like an amazing way to get into comics, through Art Spiegelman. Oh my word.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. But between there, like I was saying, in middle school, early middle school, like I always would draw a little, actually related to Dungeons and Dragons. There was, you know, they have the monster manuals, and they'd have these little, pictures of creatures and stuff. And also like Forgotten Realms books and stuff. So I draw these little lizard creatures, and then I do, I do like battle scenes of them fighting these knights. And that was, I just make a, you know, little story. And that was, I wouldn't say it was popular with my friends, but, you know, we'd pass them around and they'd be interested. Yeah, I got a 3-book deal and a movie contract out of them. But, you know, I will
give you my oatmeal cream bars 3 days in a row.
Yeah. So, and then we did like a trip to DC, as everybody does. And I did like an auto, which I didn't know it would be. It was like an auto bio comic of the trip to DC, like going to the, you know, FBI headquarters and all that stuff. So it was just something, I don't know, I naturally sort of did in my drawings. Yeah, like my drawings were always related to a story.
But that's awesome, Noah.
Just straight.
It's just amazing to me that, hearing you say that, that you just have always had this inclination toward storytelling through pictures, visual storytelling that way. And that your parents continue to encourage it, and your teachers, or your whatever setting you grew up in, your friends, if nothing else, just continue to encourage you to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of children do that. You know,
oh, totally.
In various different, I mean, if you ever look, obviously, you know, this, cause you have kids, but they always have, you know, they'll give you a page, a picture,
uh-huh,
and you'll be like, oh, like, what is this? And it will just be a picture, but it will be like, oh yeah, see, this cat climbs a tree, and in it there was this alien that came down from the moon, and they're playing checkers, and down below is like a inchworm that was left out, or so, you know, there's some like it's never just like, oh yeah, that's a picture of a flower. It's like some big story about what is going on here, what are the relationships to you know, with the illustration. So I think that inclination for narrative or storytelling is obviously strong with kids. And then, you know, just introducing it to panels and word balloons, and just sort of, now this is sort of the codified way that people can read it now, is I don't know, I guess is helpful, or is another tool that they can use.
I am positive that there's any librarians listening that they go through the same thing, but there are times when one, there's times when kids leave stuff in the library, and when I find books or stories that are left, it is the greatest thing ever. the greatest thing ever is when they make something and they come and show me. Like, I've seen sequels, or not, I guess not sequels perhaps, but new iterations of Captain Underpants
that are
paneled and amazing. And I've seen just other stories that they've made up. Just there's stuff that I get. I got a book from a kindergartner today, or this week, I mean, called The Robot. And she, Ren, I will call her out, said that it was mine to keep. I tried to give it back today, is why it was on my mind, because it was in my bag today. Mm-hmm. And she was like, no, I made it for you. But the fact that they make these books and they're amazing and they don't have that bad editor in their brain that so many of us, when we grow up, we start to edit ourselves to a degree that edits out some of this, the unhinged nature of storytelling as a child. When we start to edit that out, it's really sad. Like, when I look at my writing, I'm like, man, why can't I be as creative as Ren's robot story?
I know. It's humbling. Well, and the other thing is, I think comics, you have the other double-edged sword, or I guess it doesn't make sense. It's not the right phrase. But kids will look at, you know, you do have DC and you do have Marvel out there, and you look at what is being published there, and then you look at what you can draw, and it's demoralizing, especially I think when you're kind of getting in the middle school age where you're starting to compare yourself to the rest of the world, and you're like, well, I can't, you know, I can't draw like this. If I can't draw as you know, this really nice manga sort of style or this really slick superhero, then my work has less worth. And yeah. So that is again part of the sort of impetus of the adventures in cartooning, is saying, like, you know, no, it is not the illustrations that is making you like these stories. I mean, it is partially, but the strength of a comic is the story, is the writing, and there's plenty of ways that you can get that across with the tools that you have at any stage. You know, if you look at you know, like Chester Brown, or, you know, there's a lot of range in terms of sort of verisimilitude, can never pronounce that thing, but there's a lot of range in terms of draftsmanship skills and stuff. But children aren't really exposed to that. I mean, they might be now more with, you know, sort of, I guess their sort of visual diet in terms of illustrated books is much, I feel like it's larger now than it was when I was growing up, with Diary of a Wimpy Kid and Lunch Lady and you know, all these things. So there is a range that a kid reading now these days can see, like, oh, I can, there's room for me to express myself. But I still think there's a pretty strong I don't know, it's seeing a DC and seeing, I want to draw a superhero comic and I can't draw like that, and then just stopping creating comics, I think is a really, it's something we want to root out. Just have kids make comics. And something I do in some of my presentations is have I draw a very simple Batman, you know, with the pointy ears, and I tell all the kids, like, okay, I'm gonna draw a superhero, and you yell out when you know what superhero I'm drawing, and you basically get kind of the face, the shape of the face with little points on the head, and you know that's Batman. And then immediately, you know, they get that before I even put, you know, eyes or mouths or whatever. And it's like, is this a good Batman? Is this the best Batman you've ever seen? And they're all like, no, that's horrible. Like that. And it's like, you know, they're really harsh.
All right, guys, I got, like, your message. That's fine. Yeah, I got
it's
it.
Like, okay, all right. We made the point. Dial it back, okay, guys? a single tear goes down my
eye.
But then they really see, like, okay, we identified that character immediately without very much information. And, you know, that's what you, that's the basic you need. The basics you need is a symbol or a character that you can see from panel to panel. And that's it. And go write your stories about Batman going to the laundromat after that. So.
Yes. Well, I love in your character design that it is such simple shapes. I actually really love how, I like your line when you draw. I like that you have this really great, thick, chunky line mm-hmm. that outlines a lot of the stuff. And the blocky colors is really nice too. Are you the lead artist in this, or are James and Andrew also drawing
for Adventure Super Team? I would say I'm pretty much the lead artist.
Okay.
Yeah, I do the yeah.
Well, your stuff is really nice, Alexis. Alexis, I really like your stuff. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't throwing shade to anybody else. No. I really like your stuff.
Thank you. Yeah.
I really love that you all are going into, we had adventures in cartooning, but now you're moving those characters into, I don't know if you would say shorter stories. How else you would say it? The through First Second, you've got Griffins Aren't So Great and Sleepless Night. Those books are wonderful.
Good, thanks. And I'm glad you like them. And again, those are kind of trying to fill a little niche. I know I've worked in libraries a lot, and it's always difficult when there are. Well, I found it's difficult when there are sort of young children that like comics, and they tear through. Well, they tear through whatever's available for them. And then they're very quickly, you're like, I don't know if this is like age appropriate for you or whatever. Like, it's hard to find things. So we're hoping that this level, this sort of storybook is a good thing for you know, I don't know, kids to learn how to read while reading comics. Because I had a coworker, and she would actually read the old, this is a very Batman heavy conversation, but she would read the old Batman, the 1950s Batman's newspaper strips to her son to for him, like a bedtime story. Like, he didn't want to listen to like picture books or anything like that. He just wanted her to read him Batman strips. And so it was a very, you know, so she would read these just tons and tons of Batman strips. So this is hopefully kind of for that range of kids who want a comic book bedtime story or something like that that fits that little area.
That's a great it's a great way to look at it, that the story is short enough, like a picture book length, that you can read it in a sitting.
Mm-hmm.
The arc is sort of moves fast enough to get through it, and yet it works so well as a good picture book does, or as a good comic does. It works for a wide range of audience. I would say mm-hmm. the language is definitely there for a younger audience. I could give it to one of my kindergartners or first graders to read or to have read to them. And it's perfect for them. And yet I know that this is one of the great things about picture books, that like my fifth graders could just sit in the library during book selection and just read it and enjoy it. And then, you know, move on to whatever the next thing is for them. But it's the character design and the story is strong enough that it doesn't feel at all like it's talking down to an audience. Not that it would, but, it's meant to appeal to a wide audience, and also to be able to see this and go like, oh yeah, I could draw these characters. You've got on the end papers, you've got these great, like, draw a horse, draw the knight. But then, I don't know, this is just a great comic to study character, because this comic takes characters and puts them so up front with you. You've got the knight and the griffin and the horse, and that's really all you have in this book.
Yeah. And it's actually, I mean, these books from, I don't know what this says about me as a writer, but these books are they're really hard to write. Like, it is hard to get a tight story in, I don't know, 32 pages or however long they are. There, it almost takes a stronger writer to write something short and to get, you know, to try to get some character development in there and get a nice tight plot and stuff like that. It's been very actually helpful to me as a writer, I think, to to have to work through these books. Because you know, when you have Adventures in Cartooning is 80 pages, you know, you can fill that up with a lot of stuff. But when you just have these short little books, you want to get that story started quickly. You know, you want to get the action happening, and then it ended nice and cleanly. So there's it's been a good exercise for me, and I think hopefully, you know, as you were saying, it's not talking down to anybody, but hopefully the story there is a solid story for anybody.
I'm going to ask you to just share what the story is, to give a little synopsis, but I want to tell you up front, my feeling is the problem that you've created is that I have readers now that are like, is this a cartoon? Is this an animated series? It's the same thing that I feel like I see go through with James Burks, who does the Bird and Squirrel books, that all my kids are like, is this a cartoon? Is this going to be on TV? And I'm like, oh man, I'm sure if these people had an endless amount of time, they would look into animating these, but takes long enough just to make a book like this.
Yeah, I would love it to be animated. That'd be really, really fun.
But I think that speaks to your pacing, and it speaks to how tight you're writing, that they do get right into the story. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I need to stop. Before I say any more about the story, I'm going to let you just share. Do you mind sharing why don't we talk about Griffins Aren't So Great? Can you share what Griffins Aren't So Great is all about?
Oh boy, you're putting me on the spot here for my elevator pitch.
I'm happy to chime in too. Don't worry, you're not alone.
All right, so Griffins Aren't So Great is about, it's about friendship, is the overall theme. And it's the knight and Edward the horse are best friends. And they come across this griffin in the forest, and the griffin is pretty sweet. It looks awesome. It can fly. So the knight is pretty infatuated with the griffin's coolness, and she gets to ride him as the griffin flies, and leaves Edward, her previous best friend, behind. And so Edward feels left out, and the knight discovers that the griffin isn't maybe as great as she thought it was at the beginning. His flying also comes with some downsides, and Edward comes through at the end, saves her, and she realizes that I don't know what she realizes. She realizes how awesome Edward is. That Edward is actually pretty, pretty awesome.
The notion of like having a friend, and then finding a friend that you think is like better. Oh wait, yeah. It's not that I don't like you, Edward, but I mean this is a pretty sweet griffin. But then to come back and see that, you know, that's a common theme. The idea that the grass is always greener on the other side, or that things might turn out to be what they are. But I love it when, I don't want to ruin it, but there's a moment where Edward makes an attempt to save her, to save the knight, and the realization that she has to, what are really, it's just the knight is the only one really talking in this book. Everything else is a wordless horse and a wordless griffin, but what she says to that horse, what she says to Edward, is my favorite thing. And I have to say, too, this, what you're doing here in such a really cool way with your Adventures in Cartooning series here is that you're making graphic novels that we can read aloud at night. I know you brought that up, but that shouldn't be understated, that it's really fun to be able to have a graphic novel that you can read aloud to kids, that you can read aloud at bedtime. But because of the large panel format of this, you can read it aloud in a library. You can read it aloud in front of an audience. And that works really well, too, versus, you know, so many comics, in a great way, are meant to be held close to your nose.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great to hear, because that was very much the intent, to have it as something that you can read. And we worked a lot, and James is really great at writing and especially dialogue. And you know, we really worked, again, with our editors to try to get it so that it reads well, and it is very clear. And again, it has a very clear, I think, panel layout, which is another thing we really focused on in terms of kind of an intro to reading comics. Because sometimes, you know, it can be a little hard, especially in a larger page, to sort of figure out what the flow is. So, you know, in these books, it's very straightforward. So it's a good, it's a nice intro to reading comics. And I think that also, in terms of a writer side, something I realized with that is it does keep the beats of the storytelling beats moving pretty quickly. There's a nice rhythm in it when you have such a clear sort of panel layout. That's a fun part of the writing process as well.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought about that, to keep the writing clear like that, but that makes sense. It makes it too, you're getting compared to perhaps, I don't know, if I'm looking at Smile or if I'm looking at Eldefa or if I'm looking at something,
exactly,
you're able to communicate more on a single page. You've got more panels on a page, but here you're plotting those page turns much faster. Mm-hmm. The story is sort of propelling itself much faster. And so pacing becomes, I don't know, I guess it almost is the same thing. You're still distilling the story into a certain number of page turns and into a certain number of panels. But
yeah, I don't know if this analogy works, but I kind of think of it a little bit like in a musical way, like, you know, you have 4/4 time or whatever, and you can have, you know, whole notes, half notes, quarter notes and all that. So then if you think of, like, you know, these Griffins Aren't So Great has, it's basically a 4-panel grid on each page. You know, sometimes they are just 2, but that's combining 2 of the smaller ones. And sometimes it's 1 big panel, but the underlying structure is just 4 panels. So that keeps it, that rhythm pretty tight. While, you know, if you have I don't know what other books use, but there's often like, you know, 6 panel grids underlaying things. And so that's a different tempo, a different sort of rhythm as you read, as your eye moves across the panels. And some people keep pretty tight to the, you know, 6 panels. And sometimes they, you know, manga that blows it all over the place. You're like, what is this going? You know, what is happening here? Like, is this a panel, this little sliver I'm looking at, or is this like a you know, speed balloon? So, but yeah, so this is a pretty, I think, it was a, like I said, it was a fun challenge to write for. And I think I actually really like writing for this sort of layout. So a lot of the stuff I've been doing, sort of trying to figure out my next steps, I've been kind of using that same layout, because I don't know, it feels good.
Alexis, I love your sentiment on it being like a piece of music, that it's in 4/4, that it's a whole note and half notes and quarter notes. That the notion of tying it into a tempo like that is awesome. I love that analogy. That's great.
Yeah,
I'm really tickled by that. That's cool. Do you have, you've got 2 out with First Second. Do you have more? Are you contracted for some more?
Yeah, these little guys are part of 4. So we have Ogres Awake is the next one, which is a fun one. And then Hocus Focus is going to be the last one. Hocus Focus. And that one, was a really fun one to do. So I got to draw ogres and the next one and some little garden gnomes, which were really fun. The cover is pretty cool. Has a cute little garden gnome running past an ogre that is sleeping but has just opened its eye, carrying, and so this is pretty exciting. And then Hocus Focus features a wizard, and Edward goes through a very interesting transformation in that book. So a lot to look forward to.
Griffins just came out in September. When do Ogres and Hocus Focus come out?
Ogres Awake is going to come out, I believe it's, I don't want to get in trouble here. I think it's July.
Is it like 6 months-ish though?
Yeah, like I think it's July, July 2016. So, but I think that's what it is, but it could change. I mean,
all right. Well, know to watch for it potentially over the summer ish.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. I mean, we did literally, I love, let me take you aside to another book festival. At the National Book Festival a couple years ago, it was Rick Riordan was there talking about Percy Jackson, and he made this great comment about how, September 22nd, the new Percy Jackson book comes out. September 23rd, his writers all write to him and say, when's the next one coming out? And I know that you literally just had a book release, so I'm not trying to push for another one. These things take time, but it is exciting to know that there's two more on the horizon, at least two more. That's cool. And you're with, well, the first two books, the Adventures in Cartooning, those proper books were released. I know they ultimately were released through Scholastic as well, but who was your publisher for those originally? Was that also First Second?
Yep, that was First Second.
That's what I thought. Yeah, okay.
So those are all First Second, and then they had book club editions.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, great to be able to be in those flyers that go to to all the students. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is cool. It is. That is awesome.
All those little budding cartoonists that you're reaching. Yeah.
Well, it's cool because I remember back in school when I got those little lists. Yes! And was like flipping through and like checking all this, and you got home, my parents were like, okay, well, that would come to like $345. Like, let's scale this back a little bit.
Wait, so did you get a copy of the flyer, or did someone at least take a picture of it for you or something?
No, I didn't. I should have gotten somebody to like.
I should have told you all that stuff is online. Yeah, like as a teacher librarian, we can look at the catalogs online. I should have told you. If it happens again, we'll snap some pictures for you, because you gotta have. That's a great tie-in. We all grew up getting those like newspaper type half or one folds coming home to us.
Yeah, exactly. Man, those are great.
I know,
you always,
right?
You'd always get like a poster too. Got a couple. Posters of like a Lamborghini or something like that. I don't know.
Look at us getting all nostalgic over here.
I know.
Start with binary and end with nostalgic book fair flyers.
That's right. Yeah. Casting a wide net here.
There's something for everyone. Alexis, I am so thankful that the road led you to me and me to you. I'm really glad that we connected tonight, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. It's been really fun, and I definitely look forward to seeing you again at the book fair.
I can't wait. And you're local, so we could totally meet again. Before I let you go, though, let me ask my closing question. I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person alive or past from the kid-lit world you would want on your team and why.
On my team? Okay. I would like... This is kid lit. Can it be like any illustrator, like a cartoonist, or is it
anybody?
Kid lit
specifically? No, let's go with anyone.
Okay, so I really like this illustrator, a British illustrator whose name is W. Heath Robinson, and he's kind of known for these crazy contraptions, illustrations of crazy contraptions. Kind of, if you think of like Rube Goldberg or something like that, he's the British version of that. And they were, just hilarious, crazy, very British. You know, there's always brawlies and rain and galoshes and stuff like that. I think he would make a excellent, excellent kickball partner, because he would no doubt figure out some sort of crazy contraption that would lead to ultimate victory. In terms of,
I love your thinking. That's
like
great.
A little machine full of boots or something that would just kick the ball really far. So,
Jeez, that is amazing. Well, thank you, Alexis, again for coming on, and congratulations about the release of another great Adventures in Cartooning book, and really for what's to come in the future and more connecting with readers. I'm glad you're out there working to make great stories for our kids and to put comics in their hands too.
Great. Well, thanks for giving me this opportunity to talk about comics. I love it.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winter, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the books at allthewonders.com. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced.
Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.